mentally and physically, success could be defined as getting up one more time after you've been knocked down over and over and over again. I'm T. Wood, and this is Triumphant Moments, where I highlight significant moments beyond life above the surface to inform, encourage, and inspire people to triumph over their life challenges. With me, I said, with me today, I have none other than my brother Ken Harvey. He's from Austin, Texas. He played football at the collegiate level at University of California, Berkeley. An outside linebacker, he was the 12th overall pick in the 1988 NFL draft by the Arizona Cardinals and also played for the Washington Redskins. Ken was a four-time Pro Bowl, four-time Pro Bowl selection and recorded 89 sacks in his 164 games. He is on the Washington Commanders Ring of Fame and is one of the 80 greatest Redskins. Ken is also a children's book author and is executive director of the Touching Heart Foundation. He is married and has two sons. My brother, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Big intro.
Hey, look, with the things that you've been able to accomplish and overcome in your life, I had to consolidate that bad boy down.
Well, I appreciate it.
So I tell you what, just to jump right into it. Okay. I know I can't necessarily say regular, but what would a normal daily routine, Monday through Friday, look like? Just your daily routine. Yoga?
No, it ain't yoga, man. Okay. It's me and my wife, we both we have a look that we want to look, call it vanity, but we want to look a certain age, you know, when we're in our 60s and 70s. And so we both try to work out, get a little workout in. You also try to get studying and reading more. So for me, I've tried to develop a new habit, and I read this one book, Atomic Habits, associate a habit you already have with a habit that you want. And you do that and you just start developing new habits. So I'm trying to read more, educate myself more. And writing is becoming easier with the tools and the technology that's out there, but trying to create books and movies and plays and all that. I have a lot of things I'm trying to create.
Look, I tell you what was it like growing up in your household? Siblings?
Yeah.
What did that picture look like?
So I'm one of seven. The oldest son, I have four sisters, two brothers, I'm the third oldest child. Parents both were together. My mom passed away 2 years ago. My sister just passed away last year. And so, my older sister. And so, big families, there's a lot of two big families. You learn how to fight. You fight for food. You fight for, the pride of the family. But my parents were both, quiet, trying to make things happen. You're trying to raise two kids off of not a huge income and survive. And that's what we saw was that they both worked super hard to try to raise the kids. I was the first to go to college, the first to get outside of the area that we were in. And I think that was, that in itself is a story that I can go into it, but that was a story and having the ability to get outside that bubble of kind of sometimes staying where you're at.
Right.
A lot of times you get caught up in staying where you're at. Sometimes you have to go. Just like the story goes, where you burn the ship behind you, you got to go and say, you know what? This is, I'm putting it all out there. I'm going to go away. And then there's no looking back. I'm going to make my path.
Yeah. One step back. So get this. Some believe this, some don't. I guess you had a sister that was the oldest of all of y'all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Word is, it's an unsaid rule that the oldest is the boss, usually of all the siblings. Yeah. So is that the case?
Yes. I mean, she looked out for us, right? You got a bunch of kids and think about it. You got two parents that are trying to work. So the older sister usually has to be the mom at home because, she's there. And when everybody talk about these latchkeys that have their kids, it's more so because a single mom or two parents together, if they're not there trying to work, the kids are then raising themselves. So you need another parent figure, whoever's going to be there, and you have to install it in them that this is the way to raise the kids. And she took on that responsibility. Now, this is the oldest one that just passed away. But she took on a huge responsibility of trying to raise us and be a part of our lives. And even as adults, she was always the one that we would go to, always the one that was the peacemaker, bringing things together. So she was that source.
Did she primarily cook?
She can cook.
Can you cook?
I cook for feeding a family with no money. So, you know, my spaghetti sauce looked like it was thin and there was very little meat, but it was spaghetti. Whereas my wife can blow. She's Jamaican descent, but a lot of Jamaicans moved to England. So she's from England. Can cook galore, can oxtails.
Jesus.
I mean, it's just a great cook. Anything she puts her hands on, she's a great cook. So I don't have to worry about that. So kids, we eat her food. They won't eat my food. But that's okay.
That's all right.
That's all right.
That's all right. We rolling. Yeah. Look, when you think about your collegiate experience, just maybe in general, how would you describe your college experience?
Well, so let me give you a little backstory, because the interesting part is how I got to college. And this is probably kind of a theme of your show. It wasn't a straight path. Most people think that I must have been a star football player in high school and that type of thing. But the reality was that I was a dropout in high school. I dropped out my senior year, I think it was my other year. Didn't get a chance to play my senior high school football. Mm. Then because I didn't play my senior high school football, the hardest thing, you know, is going back. Because once you drop out, it's easy to kind of fade away.
Right.
People look down on you, start believing in what people think about you. So the hardest thing was going back. Went back to school, finished up. But then I'm trying to say I'm going to go to college, because during that time of dropout, me dropping out, it was the lowest point of my life. I was on the verge of trying to commit suicide. You know, it's more to the part of the say, but, you know, you feel like a loser. You feel like the world's looking at you like you haven't done anything. Everyone's looking at you like, why are you taking up all this food? You're not doing anything. I was a big kid, I was 6'2", about 225 pounds in the weight room all the time, but not really doing anything productive. And so I had to end up going back to school, humbling myself. And in that time, I was praying on my knees. I was like, God, you know, just give me a sign. Just show me and tell me I'm supposed to be something. I'm supposed to be somebody. And it felt to me like God said, you have a purpose and a destiny. And sometimes that's all you need, is someone to speak into your life.
Come on.
You have a purpose and a destiny. And it's not, you got to hear it on high. It could be the neighbor. It could be the person mopping floors. Just someone speaking to the light, your life, and say you are worth something. And so once I heard that, kind of created, said, okay, here's my plan. I'll go back to school. And once I go to school, I'm going to college. Because I want to prove to everybody that I wasn't dumb. Well, how are you going to get to college? No money. No one's ever been to college. It seems like a pipe dream. All I'm doing is working out, lifting weights. And so, you know, but I had that feeling. God said, you're supposed to do something. You have a purpose. You have a destiny. And once you have a driving force, that was my driving force. So when I went to school, graduated, met a guy in a gym. A lot of times in life, right? If you have, if you're speaking it into existence, you start seeing opportunities that are in front of you instead of just walking past them. People start coming to you, or some things that you would have never seen would start coming your way because you've spoken it into existence. So I met a guy at the gym. He told me about a junior college in Oakland, California. Never been outside as far as I could walk. But me and another guy, we took a chance, saved us some money, went to this junior college in Oakland, California. First time on a plane, first time outside of Austin. Knew that I had to leave because if I stayed, it would have been too easy to fail.
Right.
It'd been too easy to go back to the comfort of saying, it was okay, you tried, it was blah, blah, blah. And so end up going to the school, junior college in Oakland, California, and played there for 2 years. Then, how God works, goes to one of the top schools in the country. They gave me a scholarship to go there. So from a dropout to the University of California, Berkeley, that was the miracle in itself. And football was a byproduct. I didn't, my goals, aspiration wasn't to be an NFL player. It was more to just have a vehicle to get to college. See, that was the only way.
I tell you so much, man. What I really love that you said is how, you know, football kind of was a byproduct of all those things that you did to kind of prep yourself, and you never really let go of the mentality of, something's going to happen, not even knowing exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah. And that's a lot of times you can have a dream. And sometimes you get so focused on the dream that you don't see anything else. Sometimes you can say, God, I don't have it. I know where I'm supposed to go. And I'm just going to trust you. And so for me, it was more like, I'm going to trust you that I'm going to get to college. You said I'm supposed to do something. You said I'm supposed to be something. I'm trusting you. And so that was kind of the journey. You know, as I look back in all these years, that was the journey of trying to get there. And sometimes, as I found out in later life, we can discuss this, is that if you don't learn what God is trying to teach you, you know, you can learn, you can get all the byproducts, but if you don't learn the root of what he's trying to teach you, then you're doomed to repeat it over again. They come out in different formats, different ways, but it's the same lesson. And so, you know, for me, in all this, you know, as I look back as this older guy now, I'm having to revisit and say, okay, what lessons were you trying to teach me? It wasn't that you were trying to make me famous for famous sake. You were trying to teach me something for your sake. And that's the thing that I'm learning now is what's that message that you've been trying to teach me? And am I going to be as obedient as I was then as you want me to be now?
See, what's very interesting about that is that I want to make sure the artist doesn't miss this. I heard you mention how you had to pretty much get to a place of humility. You had to humble yourself. And when you're humbling yourself, you kind of not literally sit still, but you kind of, okay.
So the biggest humbling thing for me as a dropout, I'm 6'2", 225 pounds. I'm bench pressing like 350. I'm the big old juggler, the big old fro. Teachers are scared of me. But I'm sitting in the same classroom as my younger brother. You got to humble yourself. You got to do some of the things that are uncomfortable in order to get to where you're at. And the humble part is the thing that a lot of people mistakenly don't understand or don't find. You got to humble yourself. Sometimes it's asking people for help. Sometimes it's doing the things that, you know, sweeping floors. Sometimes it's fighting your pride. Sometimes it's doing some, you know, the things like that you would never do, think to do. But that's showing obedience. That's saying, okay, you know what? I'm willing to go back and learn. And so, you know, like I said, the things I'm learning now that I'm having to humble myself with, and it's hard. But if it's easy, everybody would do it.
Let's go. Right?
So you gotta learn and say, what is it? Whether you believe in God or not, what is it that I need to do, or what do you want me to do? What is that humbling step, first step? Because that's the first part of it. And I wrote a book, my book about my life, is called Stepping Stones. In the beginning was the word. And so I try to kind of lay out, you know, the first thing you got to do is humble yourself. Then you got to create the plan. Then you got to work the plan. You got to execute it. You got to be the one that's going to be working when everybody else is sleeping. You got to be the one that believes in it and figure out where that drive is coming from. You got to realize that you can't do it alone. There are a lot of good people around you who want to help, who are willing to help. But they're not going to help somebody who's not showing that they don't care about you or care that you're doing the work. You gotta put something into it.
Listen, I tell you what, my mother told me this, and it always sits with me. She said, babe, as long as you're breathing, as long as you're being allowed another day to see, you know, to see another day, life and going on, you are going to experience challenges. No matter what level of scale they are. So as you think about it right now, your entire life, is there anything additional that you can think of that stands out to you, whether it might have been traumatic or whether it might be something even current? What is something that you can think back on that you had to overcome in your life for you to even be sitting here with a smile on your face right now?
So I'll tell you, the thing that I feel like God was teaching me back then and trying to teach me now is fear, complacency, lack of education. Those are the three things I speak about. Fear, complacency, lack of education. Fear, you can be 6'2", 250 pounds, looking big, but you'd be fearful of talking to people, fearful of taking action, fearful of seeing what's right. You look at our world today, there's so many people who are fearful of doing something, and so you do nothing. or you become a sheep. You just follow what everybody else is doing.
Wow.
You can't be so much laid back that you just let everything go. And so right now, it's the thing that God is teaching me, because when I dropped out of high school, it was like, okay, you can't be fearful. You have to do some things that are challenging. You have to go back to school. That's challenging. It's scared to death. Who's going to look at me? I'm going to be embarrassed, blah, blah, blah. You got to tell people you're going to go to college. Well, you're not going to college. You don't have any money. Well, you got bad grades. How are you going to go to college? You got to speak it into existence. Mm-hmm. You have to get on the plane, go away from home in a place that you've never been before, going further than you've ever been before in your life. That's fearful. You got to work hard for a couple of years, and fear is good and bad. Fearful of going back home as a failure. So all those things God was teaching me then, but then as I moved on, it was easy to hide around or hide behind being a football player, hide behind being a big guy, hide behind your money, hide behind all these things. And it's like exercise. If you don't keep training, it can atrophy, it can go away. And so that was one of the things that it was back then. So even now, there are some things that I've been doing now, just trying to retrain myself on not being fearful. I wrote a song for the Commanders. Who am I? I've never written a song. I can't clap on beat, but it's a good song. And the unfearful part is like, well, take it to them and let them listen to it. Are they going to laugh at you? And you hear all these voices in your head. Are they going to think it's stupid? Are they going to think it's whatever?
Absolutely.
You got to step into it. And if you believe that's what you're supposed to do, then you got to step into it. And a lot of times, people will not step into what they're supposed to be because they're seeing something else, because they're scared. So that was the lack of education, is you got to educate yourself so that when you're talking, when you're doing whatever you're trying to do, you know what you're doing. You know, we get in the habit of trying to get by.
Yeah.
It's just good enough, or you do get something subpar. My wife teaches me this, you know, do excellence in everything that you do. And so that's it. And then complacency. It's when you get to a certain point, you think that's okay.
Right.
And that's okay is God hasn't called you to be that's okay.
It's
to keep moving up and up and up and keep growing. And so society teaches you that it's okay. You know, it's okay to have an excuse for this. It's okay for that. It's okay for whatever. And so I've been, I mean, today was probably a perfect day for me, you know, in retrospect, that to have this conversation, because I've had to relearn. I had to get on my knees this morning and say, okay, God, I don't know. I, you know, I'm here. I don't know what I got. And I know what I used to be, but that ain't it.
Come on, man.
What am I supposed to do? And so I'm having to repeat the same thing. But that's the power, is that if you wake up in the morning and you have an opportunity to repeat it, even though you may say, God, I'm still repeating the same thing over and over again. On the flip side of it, it's like, you know what? I have this opportunity to repeat it. And so that in itself is a blessing, that you're not forgotten. That in itself is a blessing. I mean, I'm not preaching, but if you go back in the Bible, all the stuff that people went through, you think of King Saul and you say, well, he was a failed king. But had he repented, had he said, I can't do this on my own, had he turned to God, he may not have been the king, but he would have been the father of the king.
Mm-hmm.
Right? God was like, okay, well, I'm not going to give the kingdom to you, but you're going to be the father of the king who has the kingdom if you just obey. But he didn't want that. He wanted to be the man. Samson gave it all to you. I'll give you your strength back. Samson chose to die when he destroyed the column. So I think a lot of time God keeps giving us opportunities, and we may get so stubborn or hard-headed or vengeful or whatever that we don't see it. So for me, like I said, today was a good day in having this conversation. So I had to kind of go back and learn and say, okay, you know, you may have to do some of the hard things that you don't want to do. You may have to have some of the conversations you don't want to have, but God wants to know that you're obedient to it. And that's it. So I know my gifts right now. I know what I have. Those can be one thing, but ultimately, even if I got a zillion dollars, it doesn't mean anything if I'm not doing what I was put on this earth to do.
I just listen, and two things. One, to also piggyback off of that.
First thing I want to go to is this. I heard you mention earlier, you know, losing your mom. I think you said 3 years
ago.
Yeah. When I think and consider what you've learned, who you've been around from your upbringing, even in our adulthood, people don't realize we still learn.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah, no doubt.
Who the heck put that fire in you to keep pushing like that, to keep to go through trying stuff that, okay, I might not be considered the professional at this, but I'm going to do it. Like, who put that fire in you?
Well, you don't realize a lot of things that you get from your parents. I think they both did in their own different ways. So my mom, you know, I remember her climbing a fence, you know, as a woman, climbing this fence to take me to football practice, you know, because we couldn't get in through the gate. She would do everything she could to take care of those 7 kids. I remember my dad working 2 jobs and coming home dead tired, but we didn't ate his food that was saved for him. And so he has to go to bed, you know, eating bread, but he's doing a job to try to raise his family. That in itself was powerful enough. But then, like I said, sometimes God would allow calamity to put the fire into you.
Let's go.
Sometimes you can, you know, until you step on something and hurt your foot, you may not, then you realize, man, you know what? I need to go another way. Until you get hit in the mouth, you may say, well, maybe I shouldn't be a boxer. Maybe I need to learn to sing, you know, whatever it is. And so calamity at that time was me dropping out of school. That had to happen. You can't look at it as woe is me. Some of the best success stories are some of the stories of failures. You know, some of the people who, the worst drug addicts were some that are the best advocates for people and getting people turned around because they went through that battle. And so I think the fire is a little bit of all of that. And hopefully we've put enough seeds in our boys that they're the same. And I'll say this real quick. You know, my wife is probably more of the rock. We've been married 34 years now.
There's a roof on that right there, bro.
Yeah. But most of those 34 years is because she's been a saint, you know, and had to deal with a lot of stuff that had it been reversed,
come on,
it'd have been easy for me to be like, you know, I don't need you, blah, blah, blah. But she's been through a lot and still is probably my biggest supporter. And I think that's one of the things that even in marriages, I'm not a counselor, but we forget that in the marriages, we look at fighting each other and still seeing that we're not supposed to battle each other. We're supposed to be back and back and fighting the world. But we spend all of our time fighting each other. And I will say this, if you believe in a God, then you have to believe in a devil. And so you better believe the enemy's trying to do things to destroy your marriage, destroy your home, destroy that fire, to put out all the embers that are burning you. So that at the end, you know, you can say, well, I got another one. You know, I got another one. Most of us are walking around. We don't even realize we're in a fight. It's like that movie, The Matrix, right? You don't even realize you're in a fight. And so I'm having to be reminded more and more that I'm in a fight because complacency, I got lulled into this sense of me.
Right.
And sort of realizing that it's not about me. Pulling this earth, there's so many people struggling, so many people hurting. There's so many things in this world that are pushing against us that if I have a skill set, then hopefully I can use that. So.
See, and the second thing I wanted to also jump on top of is when you went to speaking about the gifts. I'm not going to get too biblical for y'all. I have my personal relationship with God, right? So I try not to necessarily push it on people, but you open that door to express that, and I appreciate that. When you mention gifts, I tend to believe that just expanding that within the Bible, how it says, you know, your gifts will make room for you. Right. I tend to believe that it's even bigger than just your ability, but your actual giving. You know, you actually giving would also open doors for you, things of that sort. So when you use those talents that and those things that those visions that God puts in your head, like you go boldly with it.
Well, so you said right there, and that's probably the biggest key. Go boldly. You know, I've been, to my regret, but that's okay. God's forgiven.
Come on.
I've been timid in those gifts, timid in those things that I've had, timid in those relationships, timid in all those things. And you got to go boldly. The biggest thing, you know, like I said, this last week's been good. the Commanders just sold the team, right, and you see all the new owners there. And so Magic Johnson, the first thing he gets up and he said, I want to give glory to and honor to God. One of all these people. And he don't need to say anything like that, but he says it. And I'm like, wow, you know what? I've been timid and saying, well, I don't have to say it. You know, people know, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes you got to start saying it. You got to start living it. You got to start walking it out. Even if you're not 100% there, you got to start speaking it into existence, just like I did, you know, football, right? And so for me, I have this tattoo, my one little tattoo. I got two of them, but this is Exodus 4:2. And so the story behind it is, about 4 or 5 years ago, down the dumps and kind of figuring out, what am I supposed to do? And I start reading the Bible about Moses. And I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of like Moses was Prince of Egypt. I was an NFL player. I've been wandering around the desert for 40 years. You know, what am I supposed to be doing? And as I'm reading, I'm looking at it and I start seeing Exodus 4:2. God says to Moses, what's in your hand? And Moses says, the staff. And I'm reading that and I'm saying, well, you know what? God is telling Moses, in your hand is your staff. You may tend sheep and you may do whatever. That's, you may have your job. You may do whatever you're trying to do. But if you trust me, I'm going to part the Red Seas with that staff. I'm going to free millions of people with that staff. I'm going to lead people with that staff. If you trust me, I can do that. So it's two things. After that, he told him to take the staff and throw it to the ground. It became a snake. Moses ran away from it. That was me. I ran away from football. I ran away from writing. I ran away from all these gifts that God had given me. And he's like, go back and pick it up by the tail. You got to go back and pick it up by the tail. You got to go back and pick up your writing. Okay, if everybody calls you a children's book writer, that's okay. You write other stuff, but that's okay. Pick it up by the tail. Pick up being a football player by the tail. Don't be resentful. Use what I've given you. Then he also told Moses, he said, take the hand and put it in your vest. It came out as white as, you know, snow leopards. And he said, put it back in. And I took that to say, God saying, your hand is the hand that controls the staff, but I'm the hand that controls the hand that controls the staff. So you got to trust, you got to still remember, I'm the one that controls the hand. And that's where the source comes from. And so without the source, it's just a stick. But with the source, it's power. With the gifts that I have, the children's books, the sports games that I'm trying to create, the movies I'm trying to write, all the creativity that I have in my own hands, which I've been unfortunately trying to do it a lot by myself. Now I got to go back and realize it's not me. Remember that? I got to remember the part that it's the hand. God is the hand that controls the hand that controls the gift. So whether or not someone reads my books, whether or not someone sees my posts, whatever, my job is to put it out there.
Your assignment.
God would do whatever he's going to do with it. And so even today, you know, I'm preaching to myself, so forgive me if I blank out. I'm hearing my own self as I'm talking, but I'm listening. I'm thinking, when you're obedient, God presses it down and it overflows. And all of a sudden, there's gifts and things that come out of it that you weren't even expecting. Football, 11-year career was unexpected. The four Pro Bowls, unexpected. But the training was way back when I dropped out and I used to run by myself at night saying, I'm not going to give up. I won't quit. I got to be the best. God has given me a purpose. Boom. I won't give up. Got to be the best. All that training was the byproduct. And God was like, okay, now this is the overflow. And so I think that's the same thing in life. A lot of people want the instant success.
Come on.
You look at online and you want the immediate gratification. But there's a part that I just started reading in 2 Timothy where, you know, it's talking about how we'll have a version of God without godliness, where you want to get from A to Z.
Wow.
And this is kind of, you know, I'm not an AI advocate or against it. I love it. I use it.
Right.
But we want to get to A. I want to write a book. Throw in a couple of words and Z is done. But you haven't had to go through the struggle. You haven't had to sit up at night. You haven't had to worry about something. You don't feel the joy of relief. You just want to become super famous. You want to become a instant movie star. You want to become an instant singer or whatever, businessman, billionaire. But you don't want to go through the struggle. Most people don't want to go through the struggle
or
what it takes to get to where you need to
go. Right.
And that's the thing that I, you know, even working out, I do my little thing online, life lessons from the gym. Mm-hmm. Even working out, you got to realize there's going to be pain in building muscles.
Break it down.
If you lift weights and you just go in the gym and you never feel any pain, mm-hmm. never feel any struggle, never feel any resistance, you just take it up time.
Yeah.
When you start feeling the struggle, when you got to get that extra rep, when your body's sore the next day, when you have to push a little bit more than you normally do, that's when you get the extra rep. That's
Jewel
when you
alert,
start rolling.
Jewel alert. Jewel alert.
Yeah.
Look, I tell you what, what's clear to me is that you have a clear passion for the youth and children's books. And so, like, what motivated you to write those books, to do things for the youth, to keep them always in your mind?
So it's not so much vision for the youth.
Okay.
There are a lot of things. I think my thing is I'm supposed to be a teacher. Mm. And I don't, when everybody used to say, well, you're supposed to be a teacher, I always thought I'm supposed to be a classroom teacher. And I fought against it because I'm like, I'm not supposed to be a teacher. I'm supposed to be something greater than that. Mm. And so I believe in whatever. But that's not it. You can teach in so many other ways. But
yes.
The children's book was the first book I ever did. And the story was, you know, one of my boys came home and they were talking about a contest on TV. This was 20 some years ago. And he was like, you know, he started asking about Michael Jackson and how to get his skin so white. I'm like, why do you want to know? And he's like, well, you know, if you win, you get to be one of the characters on TV. But there were no brown characters.
Hmm.
And I didn't see it from the kid's perspective, but I was like, wow, the seeds that are planted in their minds that we don't even think about,
right,
that they get bombarded with all the time. So I was like, you know what? I want my kids to see themselves in a book, but I don't want it to be, you know, so-and-so comes from Africa or is, you know, this great blah, blah, blah. I want it to be a kid that any other kid of any other nationality could read and say, that's me. But my kids would know that's them, right? So this book here, Come and Find Me, was like hide and seek, simple book. But I had, fortunately, the guy, my teammate at the time, was a great artist, but he's a Hollywood guy now, a guy named Terry Crews. Did the artwork and did a phenomenal job with the artwork. And so...
Simple but impactful. Hold on.
Yeah.
Simple but impactful.
Simple but impactful. And so we did the book. So back to 25 years later, that burning bush moment of me having to understand the gifts that God gave me. I called him up and I said, you know, this book is just sitting on my computer. I need to do something with it. And he's like, man, this is great. I'll pay for everything. I'll put the book up. Another guy calls up this friend of mine. He says, I have this augmented reality company. In my mind, I'm thinking, well, let's put technology with writing and create this book. So we have augmented reality. And I think we're one of the first African-American writers to use augmented reality with a book.
Hey.
And so it's a kind of a tool, a combination between both. But at the end, whether you use that or not, the message is simple, is that love your brothers. Love each other, and then also my boys. You know, it's more prevalent now, but my boys will see themselves as them.
Mm.
And it's not a race thing. It's just any kid will watch it. I mean, any kid of any color can read this and say, that's me, because we do the same thing. Me and my brother, we fight, we play hide and seek and all that stuff, but my boys know it's them.
Yeah.
And so that was the start of me writing books, kids' books. And now I've been trying to just see messages, because that's what I know, is that we get a lot of seeds from when we're young.
Mm-hmm.
And you could be 58 years old, a grown man in this big shell, but you still have those seeds in you. And if those seeds aren't nurtured and motivated,
and grown right,
you're just a big man with anger issues.
That's
you're a big man with hurts. You're a big man with fear. You're a big man with I don't know how to communicate. You're a big man all these things that you never got dealt with as a kid.
Yep.
And so to me, that's teaching. And that's why I try to do the children's books. I have the life lesson from the gym. I'm doing a book on that.
Okay.
So that's easy. It'll be done probably next week or so. I'll maybe just give it out free.
Okay.
But there's another book that I want to do that I can't give the name, but I think it's going to be a cool tool to help kids build a bridge to communicate to people in the public, because we're getting so caught up in our own worlds with our own pieces of technology that we're not talking to each other.
And piggybacking off of that, that is excellent that you do that, because even from COVID, what did COVID cause us to do? Right. We had to distance ourselves from each other. So that particular project, I absolutely look forward to that. I wanted you to also touch bases on Touching Heart Foundation.
So I'm no longer with them, but it's a foundation called Touching Heart, which is to teach kids about compassion, giving and empathy. Because I know in our culture and a lot of people places, people point the finger and say, well, you should know better.
Oh yeah.
But because of everything, no one's teaching better.
Right.
And so you don't know what you don't know, right? And so fortunately there are nonprofits out there. There are tons of nonprofits.
Yeah.
But this nonprofit tries to work with kids to try to help them learn and do things that show compassion and understand about compassion and empathy, because that's the thing that's being, you miss. If you don't deal with people, you don't know how it hurts someone's feelings.
You don't.
If you don't deal with someone. It's easy to type something and walk away. You don't see the other side, the hurt, the pain, how that person is affected. But if you're face to face with it,
right,
you understand. If you had to go a day without eating food, you don't understand what hunger is until you're hungry yourself. Mm-hmm. Then you start saying, wow, there are people out there like that. There are people that I can help. Or you start appreciating what you have. You start saying, man, thank you. When people just say prayers before their meal, mm-hmm, you start saying, thank you for this meal, because you realize there are a lot of people out there who don't have that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what the nonprofit, my whole life has been just trying to help people. And sometimes you get to a point where you're kind of like, I've been frustrated and like, God, I'm tired of helping people. And I can't do it all myself, and you know, whatever. And maybe you can, but that's where I have to go back and say, well, what are the gifts that I have?
There you go.
How can I use those gifts?
There you go.
And then trust God in the rest. And so books are one way to use a gift. Speaking, engagement is one way to use the gifts. I have this new sports game that I'm trying to create.
Okay.
That in my gift of playing football and sports,
right,
with this new game, it's called Flow Ball. It will give people, not just kids, adults, everything, opportunities to play, but it doesn't matter if you're a guy or a girl, it doesn't matter who you are.
Okay.
Anybody can play the game. As long as you equal partners, you can play the game. And it's easily transferable into video games, meta world, whatever. So there's a bridge between the technology and the real thing. And so I think if the game catches on, hopefully, it will be a way to communicate and for people to get together, because we know through sports is a great bridge.
It is.
I've seen guys who automatically I used to look at and say, man, I'm gonna hate this guy because he looked like that redneck son of a gun from Texas that had chew in his mouth and a cowboy hat. And used to call my dad and me all sorts of N-words.
Uh-oh.
I'm gonna hate this guy. And then you start playing with him and you realize, wait a minute, that person is dealing with some of the same issues you're dealing with. That person is actually cool. I've had a conversation with that person. I've had a conversation with their parents. The image I thought isn't the image that is. And so you start seeing through sports
barriers.
Or the coach says, you know what? Y'all want to hate each other? Then everybody's going to run, because what you are is a team, and a team has to learn to work together. So sports is a great bridge in everybody. And even so now, me and another guy, we coach this congressional football game. Mm-hmm. We have about 30 Congress members of both parties on the same team playing flag football against the Capitol Hill Police to raise money for the families of fallen officers.
Right.
But here you are, you got members on the Hill, which some of them, you know, I want to just choke because I'm listening to some of the stuff they say, but I'm also reminded, what's in your hand? Here's the bridge that you have. This is your opportunity to speak to them in a non-threatening way,
right,
but to get them to work together, to realize that it's not just, you know, you'll never win a football game with just offense, just defense, or just special teams.
Right.
It's the team together. You'll never win, be good in this country with just Republicans or just Democrats.
Right.
You have to work together.
Yep.
And so that's kind of the bridge.
I tell you what, I want people to, so for everybody that may be interested in just following, or that, what if they want to book you for speaking arrangements and things of that sort, what social media platforms can they go to? What websites can they go to?
Yeah, so that's the part I got to get better with. You know, when I talk about that education and continue to learn. So I'm on Instagram, I think it's at KenHarvey57.
Okay.
LinkedIn, you can definitely find me on LinkedIn. You can find my email. But there are ways to find me. So if you go online, Facebook, I'm on Facebook. You can reach out, and so you know you can reach out there. I'll have a website up with all these different things right now. Sometimes the enemy gets you, and that you're trying to do too many things.
Yeah.
Instead of focusing on one thing.
That's right.
And so I'm trying to narrow stuff down to say, these are the things that I need to do first, or what are some of the things that I need to really build into before I try to do everything. So
y'all need to hear that now. I'm not even gonna let that just float by. All right. You can have vision, you can have dreams, you can have aspiration, but at the same time, as you move forward, trying to actually with purpose narrow down what you're going to put your energy into is more effective than scattering yourself everywhere and putting bits and pieces over here and over there. And see, that rings a bell. I work in the mental health field. I'm a mental health therapist also. So when you say stuff like that, it just shoots stuff off of my head like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's important.
Well, it's becoming like, I was probably ADHD, or when you get all these images, things bombarded to you the time, your brain starts training itself to get used to that.
Just think about it.
Then when it stops, you're freaking out because you know. And so for me, I was a kid, I used to watch TV all the time.
Gotcha.
It was when they first started having remotes. And I'm just sitting there flipping through all the channels. Still do it today to the point. And your brain starts thinking like that. So you never start learning to focus on one and saying, okay, I gotta see this completion. I gotta do this 100%. It's what we try to teach our boys. You know, you can play any sport that you want, but if you sign up for something for that year, you gotta stay with that sport, and you gotta give 100% while you're doing it. But you gotta focus that one time. And that's one of the things I'm relearning again. Focus. You gotta focus on what you want and make it grow. And so I'm trying to go back and say, okay, what are probably the top five things that I really want to focus on and make them grow? And how can I do that? Because you only have so much time, and you realize that life fades away. Time keeps going on.
It does.
And you're spread so thin that instead of moving 100 yards straight ahead, you moved 100 yards sideways and backwards and
come on,
5 yards here and there. So you don't. And you look at the end of your life, you kind of like, well, what did I accomplish?
Come on.
So
look, there's something I created called Encouragement for Free. I want to gather that from you, but there's something before I go there that I want you to be able to provide to the audience. As a father, at some point, God calls us all home. Okay, for your sons. What would you want them to take from your life? What would you want them to take from?
So as a father, I want my boys to know that their dad loved them, and I want their kids to know that that they were loved. I want them to be a good father to their kids and try to do the best that they can for their kids. And doing my children's book, that was my example. I was trying to do the best I could for my kids. I would want them to know that to care for people and to have a good heart. And so far, my boys seem like they're great in their character. The things that I see in myself that I would change and actively trying to change is to be, stand up for what you believe in, which they do. I would want them to, my youngest son is more like me, where he's more the entrepreneur, adventurous side. It's okay. If you want it, you can go for it. You can be adventurous as you want to be, but you also have to know that there are some rules in this universe that apply, and you would have to follow some of those rules. You can't just say the heck with everything. If you jump off a building, there's such a thing as gravity. It's going to take you down. So there are some real lessons in life that may have to apply. If you want to be something, you may have to get an education first before you can become whatever that else is. He's done that, which he's done great. My oldest son, he's a super nice guy, but there are times where, and I don't know if he does, I think he's gotten passes, so he may be teaching me. But there are times where you got to say no. There's times where you got to speak your mind. There are times in your household where you got to say, hey, if we got to fight, we got to fight, but we got to get this thing situated. Speak your mind. Because you can't please everybody. And that's my big fault in my life is that I was trying to be a people pleaser. It was good in football because I wanted to do well for my teammates. I would jump over a bridge and do whatever for my teammates. That was my attitude. But if you always rely on trying to please people, you'll never do enough to please everybody or even probably the people around you. It'll never happen. And you'll be end up destroying yourself. So I tell my boys, you can't be that. And I'm not saying that they are. Set the tone because people will follow. People want to follow. They just need to see something in you. Because people need beacons of lights. And the world is becoming a lot darker, at least I see it, in some ways. And so they need beacons of light. And even if it's, I tell my wife, even if it's just cooking a meal that your kids come home to because they keep remembering that meal and remember how great it is. Every time they come home and sit at the table and they're open to have a conversation because their meal is so good and everybody sits around and talk, that's your opportunity to change the world. That meal could have been the very thing that changes the world. Don't sell yourself short on the gift that you have. Understand the gift that you have and embrace it. And so I think a lot of people in the world think, well, who am I? Or I'm too small. Or they get so angry that they go 100% the other way and forget the grace part.
Come on, man.
We need, you know, this world is missing, I think, a lot of the grace. This isn't making me in trouble. This is my thing. Okay, I'm on it. You cut it. America, we've been given, God is like, if you read all in the Bible, he's like, if my people will repent and this, then this will happen. We've been given so many chances to repent in America. And I'm not saying reparations. I'm saying just to say, you know what? We admit there was wrong. We admit that there was undoing. We admit that there were some bad things. Then on the other side, it's if you forgive, it's you got to forgive as well. There's a little bit of both that has to come in between. And I think we forget that there's a little bit of both. So some people are like, well, we can't teach this or we can't say that. And some people are like, everybody's bad and everybody's wrong. And then you forget, in the 60s, there were a whole lot of white people that were marching, as well as black people, risking their lives, risking their families, their reputation, as well as black people. On the other side, you can't say these cultures, these races, these whatever happened, done or did something to help America become great. Mm-hmm. What made America great is that we said, this is our belief. This is the ideal. This is where we're reaching for. Mm-hmm. If we do those things, if we reach for those and we hold it and do it hand in hand together, we could be as powerful as we want to be. But don't mistake it. The world is struggling. There's a lot of craziness going on. And it will only get worse because good people are leaving and hiding or saying, I don't want to deal with it. And we need to learn to fight, but we also need to learn, like I said, the grace in between.
So basically, there's this thing, again, that I created called Encouragement for Free. When you think about all the things that you've gone through in your life, your creed, you know, it could have been things that you were taught, and it could be the most basic thing, you know, out of everything that you've been through and that you've experienced in your life. For all the audience and everyone that will be watching this podcast, What is some encouragement for free that you can leave them with?
Well, as you found out, I don't give short answers, but it's, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Treat others how you want them to treat you. Perfect example, at the Pro Bowl, my dad's here, sees his favorite football player. I walk over to him and was like, hey, could you say hi to my dad? Just don't let him not say anything. So he goes up to my dad, hey, Mr. Harvey, how you doing? Hey, just want to say welcome, you know, just welcome. I'm glad to meet you. Dad was like a little kid. It was the greatest thing in the world. Seeing this grown man become like a little boy. Oh my God, he said, my dad would come back. He said hi to me. How do you know my name? You told him. And I was like, oh, Dad. I mean, he's all giddy and stuff. And then I remember that's how kids feel sometimes when they meet me. And so I try to treat every child with respect, the parents, people with respect. The hard thing is when those people stop treating you with respect. Because, you know, people get out there and they're like, well, you know, forget everybody else. But can you sign these 12,000 things for me? They'll say rude stuff because they don't like you. Yeah, whatever. And it's like, okay, I'm going to try to treat you with respect. And I've had my bad days, but if we can try to respect each other and treat each other well. The problem is, by my very saying, treat others how you want to be treated. Right. If you don't feel like you've been treated well, if right. you don't understand yourself and how you're treated, then you have none. You have no basis, no good basis to go by. And so if you don't figure you have a good basis in yourself, then look at somebody else, because hopefully they make an example for you.
I have to end it on this particular note, and I really want you to
give a short answer.
No, not at all. I really want you to step into this particular question. Your life, you just take a look back at it. And pardon me, this may be the therapist in me, okay? But you take a look back at it. Mom sitting here, being able to speak to you one more time. Looking back on what you've done to this point, I'm talking about ups and downs, no matter what, you're here. What would you say to her?
So I would say, Mom, it's not over for me yet. And I'm going to be beyond the football, beyond all the other stuff. I'm going to be that person that you want me to be. I think I've done a lot of good stuff, but there's so much more, and I know time is short. So I'm working to be what you want to be, because if there's anything in me, if anybody sees anything in me, then they see a part of you. And I need to pass that down to my kids as well.
I said it before, I'll say it again. Sometimes in life, you must fail in order to succeed. But one thing must remain certain. Under no circumstances do you ever, ever, ever give up. I'm T. Wood. This is Triumph Moments. I'm with my brother, Ken Harvey. Thank you, brother. All right.
All right.